show! You have all made it to the dance. You have all made it.
Coming to you from the X-Access, it's John of All Trades with your host, John X.
Welcome to the John of All Trades podcast, episode 369. Nice. I'm your host, John X. Thank you for joining us. Glad to have you back once again. And this show was one of the most fun times I've had recording in some time. And the reason for that is, it's a beautiful Denver, very late spring day. I have a fresh cold beer right in front of me. And I'm in front of one of my favorite places in Denver, Ratio Beer Works, talking with Jason Zumbrunnen, the co-founder of this fine establishment, who got me this beer and was goodly enough to share his insights and experience with me. So here we are, episode 369. It's Denver, it's beer, it's punk rock, it's entrepreneurship. I could have talked to this guy for a month of Sundays. It was that great kind of conversation where as soon as you sit down, you go, oh, we are right there. Like, this isn't going to take much work to get on the same page at all because we already started on the same page. That is fantastic. And it's no wonder that I enjoy their beers so much. It's no wonder that I've seen so many great concerts and so much terrific live music there. It's just a vibe. And it's kind of part and parcel to the way that the scene feels in Denver right now. So I say that as someone who goes to a lot of local shows. I say that as someone who visits live music venues quite a bit. And I go, man, how is it so good right now? And the reason it's so good is because of dudes like this. So as I had this conversation, as I played it back once again, as I put it together, I thought, this is very easygoing. So if you are into this, and the fact that you are listening to me right now probably means that you are into it, you are going to enjoy this. This is going to fly by for you and is going to be probably indicative of your concert going habits and your drinking habits. So I just put that out there. This episode, we were out in the sun. So sometimes if the conversation feels a little choppy, it might be because I was looking at my recorder because I couldn't see it with the glare of the sun that was coming onto it. I go, God, I hope I'm recording this. And man, I hope it sounds okay. So I've listened to it back. It sounds okay. But that was distracting me during the course of the interview. So I share that with you now, just so you know it. Additionally, I'll tell you, this sounds a little bit different than most of my shows because I did do it outside. Normally we're inside, and even if there's noise, I can filter most of that out. But you'll hear some street noise, you'll hear some wind, you'll hear some things happening. We just recorded it in the wild. This is two dudes sitting on a patio talking to each other about beer and punk rock and how do you differentiate yourself in a crowded business landscape. So, aka, it's kind of my favorite shit. So, if you're here, thank you for being here. If you think there are others who would like to hear this conversation, please share it. Across social media platforms, my handle is JOATPod. No matter what platform you're on, if it's JOATPod, it's probably me. You can email it to people. Just tell someone that you listen to the show. I mean, that's like the kindest gesture you can do for any content creator. Like, hey, I found this. I like it. I think you'll like it too. What a cool gesture. That's how good stuff propagates. So however you want to promote the show, I appreciate it. If you're on a podcatcher, no matter what it is, whether it's Apple, whether it's Spotify, whether it's Pandora, if there's a rating function, if there's a review function, just take a few minutes and be like, hey, this show's fun. I really liked it. Or I like this particular interview. That kind of thing is super meaningful to folks like myself. So thank you for doing that. All right, that's enough talk. Let's get to this episode. I've got Jason Zumbrunnen. He's the co-founder of Ratio Beer Works. We talk all things entrepreneurship, craft beer, podcasting. We project ourselves into the future. It's a great, great summer time. I hope where you are enjoying yourself, and I hope you enjoy this show. Episode 369 is nice, and it's with Jason Zumbrunnen, co-founder of Ratio Beer Works. It starts right now.
We, you know, Memorial Day is the kickoff to summer, so it's awesome. So June starts all our events through that, and then into July. Big one, too, our Punk Rock Saves Lives Festival. Yeah. We're doing it for 3 days this year, which is the first time. We've done 2 days
I've been there twice. I've been to the previous two.
And I think this year we drifted it into July, and specifically because NoFX, another great punk band, is doing their final tour, and they're playing 2 days in Denver.
At the Junkyard, right?
They're playing at National Western over here. I don't think Junkyard.
Okay.
Junkyard's down south,
Oh,
right?
No, you're right. I could remember. But
amazingly, and I think that's the weekend we normally do it, but amazingly with that, and I really should find the dates here. You can fix it in post.
Yeah.
But we're having Eric Melvin, the guitarist of NoFX, is going to do a DJ set on the first night show afterwards. So the after party is here at Ratio Rhino. And he's going to do a DJ set. It's going to be awesome. And then so we pushed the Punk Rock Saves Lives Festival into right after
July 4th
of
weekend,
July.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah.
So July 4th is on a Thursday this year. So I think we're going 5th, 6th, 7th or 6th, 7th, 8th, something like that.
That's awesome. Well, the previous 2 years were great. The first one was here. I remember seeing like Make War back in that back room.
That was for our anniversary.
That
we
was
had Make War.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That wasn't Punk Rock Saves Lives?
That wasn't Punk Rock Saves Lives.
No, they
We've
did
only
play.
Done that. At they did play another one. You're right.
Yeah,
though.
Yeah, no, that because I saw the Frickishinas that day too.
Yes,
that was. I feel like no, or was that down south? I can't remember now.
Well, so now you're confusing me too, which is great. We had Make War for one of our anniversaries, but that would have been in February. So you're right, though. I think they did come back and play, but that may have been just a side ancillary event, and maybe it was with.
No. That was the one with Tsunami Bomb.
Yeah, that was down south. That was at Overlord.
Yeah.
That was the same, I think, year Alkaline Trio was doing Colorado's for Lovers Fest was at Fiddler's, the same weekend. And we actually got to do
That's
a
right.
special beer. So I was bouncing around. I think I got back to Ratio Overland, our southern location, in time to see Tsunami Bomb that night. And then I came the next
day. They really melted everyone's face
that
day, too.
They sounded great.
I hadn't seen Tsunami Bomb in I don't know how long, but they came in and they crushed.
Yeah.
It was great. It was phenomenal. And then
you love it when the older bands, you're like, oh, you practiced. Because we've all seen bands that kind of come back, or maybe they've been playing the whole time, to be fair to them, but definitely seen bands where you're like, oh, I loved this band. And then you go, oh, boy, you guys have been sitting on your couch. This is like your first show back.
Do we have?
They were great, though.
Do we have any chance of the Fairlands playing?
We've talked about this a lot. It actually gets brought up because Ratio, our 10-year anniversary, comes up in February.
Oh,
so
wow. All right.
We've been talking about it a little bit.
That'd be good. All right. Well, this is Jason Zumbrunnen, the founder. And are you still head brewmaster?
Not really. We have Evan Beggs now, who's our head brewer.
Are you like emeritus?
Yeah. There we go. I have an honorary degree still now over it. I have one other business partner, and I generally handle the brewing stuff, but we have Evan actually running both brew houses and brewers.
Okay. So it's been, you said you got your 10-year coming up in February. Mm-hmm. 9 years, man. That's a nice run, no matter who you are.
Yeah, it's been wild because obviously, and let's not talk a lot about COVID, because boring, we're done. It's in the past. We actually refer to it as BC before COVID if we have to reference it.
Dude,
but
when I talk about it, I say that's a real BCAD moment too. Just very much so, because like I can picture my life before it, and now everything after it's different.
Well, and it helped us a lot distinguish when something is important to go back and talk about, or is it like that was before the world changed and don't go back and dwell on that because everything's changed.
Right.
So that helps us guide when we're moving forward now into this whatever era we're in. But anyways, you were the 9 years.
Yeah.
It felt like, you know, we had just had our 5 year as we went into it, and it was crushed. Maybe my favorite of our anniversary parties. With Joyce Manor here.
February 2020. Oh, dear. Okay.
Yeah, it was like 2 or 3 weeks before the shutdowns. And, yeah, we let it rip. That's good. So our five-year. And then it's felt like there was, you know, 3 years of muscling. And now we're back. But it is now it does feel like when you get old, really old, and you start going, oh, my God, how many birthdays have I had?
I feel that. I was at Bad Cop last night down at HQ.
Oh, yeah.
And Bad Cop, they were at Punk Rock Saves Lives last year.
Yep.
And they absolutely destroyed in your brew house. That was one of the rowdiest pits, of that size that I think I've ever been a part of. But it wasn't the drinking or, if you take a hit off the vape or whatever. wasn't that. It was staying up late that made me so tired the next day. That's how I know I'm old. Because I still love to go and do it, but my God, like disrupting the sleep schedule.
I do love the early shows now. In fact, sometimes I pick my venues by how good they are on their schedule. So frankly, like Marquee and Summit are really tight on their schedules.
Yeah.
Like if it's a 6 p.m. door, that means first band 7.
Yeah.
And you can almost set your watch to, you're like, okay, here's the next band, and it's done, and they might be done at 11, and you're like, great, I'm going home.
HQ was pretty good about that last night, too.
They
but
were.
It's still, I mean, it's still like a school night, and I still have kids that are 9 and 7. So, and one of them wakes up with the goddamn sun. So
that's rough. My son's 17 now, so he's now going to the shows with me and my wife.
I alluded to it. You're an old punk rock guy.
Yeah.
The Fairlanes. I checked you guys out again. So the name was familiar, but I listened to it before I came over here, and I go, oh, this was firmly in my wheelhouse.
Like, yeah, right.
Because when you guys dropped albums, it was like 99 to 03-ish. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yep. Yeah, when we actually put the albums out. We started playing in 97, though.
Sure.
We had some, 7 inches, but that was kind of our heyday of actually releasing anything.
I graduated high school in 2000.
Oh, yeah.
And so that was right there for me.
Yep.
And so that era was phenomenal. When you were forming the Fairlanes, who were your guys? Who'd you grow up, wanting to be? Where did you take that from? Who were your guys? Who were your bands?
Yeah, I got into punk rock. The really funny story out of that, in high school, and had a good buddy up in Fort Collins. He was actually on American Idol as Magic Cyclops. He's a hilarious dude. And literally, we had started listening. I had a bud who I would drive around who didn't have a car, and he was into Descendants. Is this Sound Fine Wind? He was into Descendants, Green Day, all these. And so every time he'd pop in my car, he'd pop in like, here's Enjoy by the Descendants album. And I was immediately like, I love it. I liked Heavier already, but I liked the melody of it, a lot of those bands. So started getting into that just listening, but hadn't really gone to shows. High school, Fort Collins in the 90s, not a lot of that kind of show.
Did you read Glory Guitars?
No.
By Go-Go Germain?
No.
She grew up in Fort Collins, and she's like,
I know the name.
She's like a teen. It's like Tales of a Teenage Riot Girl.
Yes.
So she talks about sort of almost
that. I've seen that her advertised that she had that book.
It's great.
Yeah.
That book, you would take.
I love
the
it.
Shit
yeah, same
book.
Era.
Oh, yeah.
But so really funny. My first real show, though, was because of the store Best Buy. And at the time, everyone who's young won't realize. First, they used to have stores that sold music.
Yeah, physical copies. Yeah.
But anyways, Best Buy was actually the next wave. They came in, and CDs were expensive, especially think about inflation.
Oh, God,
you go to Sam Goody or Tower, and it was like $17-$18 for a CD.
And 25 years ago, too.
Right, like, 25. You're right. It'd be like a $35. I don't know
what
it
is. Yeah, who knows?
A million? And anyways, the whole thing was they started offering like $10 CDs, and it blew everyone's mind, and they were trying to get everyone in to buy washing machines or whatever else.
Yeah.
So they offered cheap CDs. But their big push was to have wild, varied genres, saying, hey, we're not just going to carry top 40 KCK some. And so they did these funny commercials where it'd be like, hey, you like country? We've got blah, blah, blah. Anyways, they did a punk rock one with a band called Screeching Weasel out of Chicago.
I know them.
And they're actually on this Best Buy television ad. And it's hilarious. It's just like punk rocker, but of course, like London style, huge Liberty spike.
Yep.
And it's, if they have Screeching Weasel, I'll get a job. And then it cuts to, my brain hurts, Screeching Weasel, $9.99, Best Buy. And then they show them flipping burgers or whatever at the end. Anyways, literally, my bud saw that commercial and was like, oh, I like punk rock. I've never heard of this band. Went to Best Buy, bought it. And then literally was like, hey, they're playing at a VFW hall in like the boonies, not even in town. And I was like, great, let's go.
Wow.
And it was just singularly this phenomenal, fantastic show. First, like, mosh pits I've ever seen. The Queers played with them.
Wow.
Another great, I'm thinking another band. There's a band from Wyoming called Plankton. But what a wonderful sold-out show. Whoever threw it was phenomenal. Just Circle Pit, but, it's pop punk, but a little heavier
yeah,
back
well,
then.
Yeah, that's.
And I immediately was like, this is phenomenal. I was playing some music and had a guitar, but was just fiddling around. And I went home that night and was like, I bought CD, shirt. I was like all in.
Yeah.
Started learning how to play songs. And from there, that kind of spurred it all. So
that's a phenomenal story. And I think if you talk to most punk rockers, there's that kind of thing. I remember, like, at the time I was really into like Metallica and
yeah.
like metal and all that. And then I was on my way to swim practice, and this kid was giving me a ride, and I'm like, what is this? Like, this, what? I hooked this up to my veins, and it was like mustard plug.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, I got into the ska core, and
yep.
So, like, Boston's were hitting at the time. Real Big Fish was really big at the time, but I went to my local, like, tape and CD store, and I was thumbing through it. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to take a shot here. Less Than Jake, Save Ferris, Suicide Machines, and then that grew into punk. So, like, I'm right there with you. And then when you go to a show, you go, whoa, dude, like, you can just do this?
Yeah, right. Once again, you know, now we're blessed to, like, being in, I don't know if you grew up in Denver, but
I did.
Denver,
I,
the amount
you,
of
oh,
venues.
So you said Fort
I grew
Collins.
Up in Fort Collins. I went to school in Boulder.
Right.
Started a band in Boulder.
Okay.
But the amount of venues down in Denver is just phenomenal, and that you can go explore and actually be like, this is awesome live music.
Yeah. Well, 100%, because my opinion is this scene is as strong as it's ever been, I think. And I would say you guys are a big part of that because, you know, you'll have, like I saw Jen Pop was here
yeah.
with Jeff Giles from All Waffle Trick, like just doing acoustic stuff. I've seen Mad Caddies here. I've seen Make War a bunch of times. You are part of that scene. And so I imagine that was an intentional choice for you. But I'm wondering about the steps that led you to create basically the scene you want to have.
Yeah, actually, that's a great one because it was half intentional and then half not accidental, but a unintended awesome consequence of starting a brewery was my other partner, Scott, was in bands too, and he's a bit younger, but played in Boulder. He's more post-hardcore. We were more pop-punk. Mm-hmm. But starting the brewery, like, we had stopped touring. I toured full-time for, like, 3 or so years, plus going to Japan and Europe in the 2000s. But it was a good time to end. We weren't making money. We were paying enough to, like, do the tours.
Sure.
But so went on with our lives and then with starting the brewery, it was definitely intentional of when we thought about, well, what's the core? We knew we were entering a really difficult market in Denver.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, who are we? And really setting that. And music obviously was a huge part of it. And beer being such a connection to music.
Right.
We always said, like, my love of beer grew from touring and going to live music, of having beer. And the idea that beer is this connector to these activities and people. And we love it. And so through art, music, all these things, we knew we wanted to do that. But maybe unintentionally, we didn't necessarily know we would tie that so much back to our tap room. We knew we'd go support the Larimer
oh, sure.
Lounges of the world and things. But now, all of a sudden, hey, we can go support a live music venue. Maybe the band beforehand wants to stop and do a Tiny Desk-style mini session.
Yeah, yeah.
So especially early on, we started having success at that. We had the Menzingers do our very first one, and then they've done it like 3 times. And it's phenomenal. And all of a sudden, this how we can kind of be part of convincing people to go out, buy tickets, go to live music, but also pre-gathering spots and get out of your house, do something fun. And unintentional was how much we're back involved in the music scene, but now just not as musicians. Like,
just totally
and
happy
in a great
accident.
Way, being sideways back in. And as people grow, a lot of times you stop going to as much music or listening to new. I'm back in. I'm listening to as much music and probably going to more shows than I ever have. And I'm 49 now. So, and now I'm going with my son and my wife.
You know, same. I went a ton because I was a college radio DJ up at KCSU in
oh,
Fort
yeah.
Collins. And so I hosted the punk rock radio show on Friday nights. And I used to get free tickets all the time. But now, like, I mean, I'm paying for it. But, like, I love going to see local shows. And
yeah.
the local scene is amazing here. So, and we get touring acts through here all the time. They all talk about what a great town Denver is. That, to me, is just, it's phenomenal. I also have to give you guys a shout because once upon a time, I was doing a nonprofit thing called Mile High 100. So I co-founded that. It's like a Shark Tank style thing for nonprofits. We would invite 3 of them in. They'd have 5 minutes to pitch. Anyone in attendance had to pledge to give $100 to whoever won. So the idea
cool.
is you get 100 people, that's $10,000.
Yeah.
We never got 100 people, but as we were sort of bouncing around venues, we ended up reaching out to you guys, and you guys were the coolest to work with.
Awesome.
Like, literally, your staff was just, they could not have been nicer or more accommodating or more helpful. And what I'm curious about is, how do you create a culture like that? Because you are steering the ship here. You are the leader. And so you kind of set the tone. How do you establish that across your entire company?
Yeah, it's a great question because, once again, there's one thing we have an idea when we start the brewery of what we want to do and how we involve beer. And then there's the practicality of as we go, oh, hey, we didn't go out of business. Now what do we do? And right away, it was just organic. We started with things we knew and wanted to support. Music, art, people doing cool stuff. And we just naturally did what kind of came to us or that we knew about. But frankly, as lots of people starting businesses will tell you, that quickly outgrew itself to once we were established and people actually kind of started knowing us instead of us finding things.
Right.
In a good way, the good problem to have is people started coming and asking, oh, can you do this? Can you do this charity, all this? And everyone will say, at some point, you get stretched too thin. And we did that. We started realizing it was like we were doing an event for a fishing village somewhere, different country. And the amount of effort. And then we were just getting going on all these other things we wanted to support in Denver. And that realization is a hard thing that you only have so much time or resources. So you do have to limit it. So it did help us that we kind of created this, what is ratio? What's the core of ratio? These ratio core. And where we actually almost sat down and brainstormed of like, is it music, arts, people doing kind of entrepreneurial or creative ideas, and especially local first and then spread out from there.
Yeah.
Go, hey, one thing breweries are basis of communities. They yes. gather people together. The people are what actually make great communities like Denver. We're just a conduit for it, and hopefully beer is what pulls people together. So we really like that idea with programs like what you were saying, the Mile High 100,
yeah.
Was like, wow, these are groups and pulling people together doing cool things, so how can we be part of it? And if it checks off that part, especially that it's local, because we want to be a strong asset in our own communities.
Yeah, so to your point, I really like that guiding ethos because that almost helps to help make decisions for you.
Yeah.
Right? Where someone presents you something and you go, yeah, that's not really our thing. Like, I'm sure what you're doing is great. Maybe it isn't, but I'm sure whatever it is great, but it doesn't really fit with what we do. And so ours was very DIY and it had to be a Colorado-based charity. And so,
yeah. That's probably one of the hardest things is when you get big enough that you have to really start saying no.
Yeah.
It's really easy to say yes when there's only a few things going on because sure. you're like, hey, anyone will, you know, that we can help or, you know, we're trying to spread our name as well. But after a while, that's the discipline. But the thing to convince to our crew and to get them is, but if you say no properly, it means the things we say yes to, we can do better. And that's the big thing. If you spread too thin, then you do everything kind of poorly.
Yeah, I used to say when I was in corporate, I have like 10 different jobs, and I don't do any of them particularly well.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. So it's a great similar thing.
Yeah, so no.
So we picked our focus of what we do well. Now, of course, everyone, we always have weird pet projects, or we always love to try things too. Kind of that spirit, and I think it's Colorado, is kind of that willingness to try things. So we'll kind of do proof of concept all the time. Let's try it out. But if we redo it, hopefully we learn lessons, and that helps us focus where we're going to put our time.
No, that makes really, really good sense to me. And so having sort of a strong central tenant and like an identity, and like I would say, I mean, at this point, those who know that Ratio is like got a punk DIY ethos, right? But you don't kind of wear it like out front the way something like True Brewery does, right? And
yeah.
I love True. Like I love going there, but you know from the second you walk up that it's like a heavy metal brewery.
Yeah. That's another great thing. You'll know a lot of our things, even as a brewery, we try to not be too on the head.
Yeah.
Maybe some of the events we do, it should become obvious, but we want people to know it through things we do and not how we necessarily say it.
Right.
And in fact, especially with that, you can pigeonhole yourself. We actually looked at a few places. Illegal Pete's was an interesting thing. It's a burrito place here in Denver, you know, in the shadow of Chipotle that also started out of Denver. Well, Pete started out of Boulder first.
Right.
But,
yeah.
They created this thing where it's kind of music-based, and they have, like, tattooed people and louder music, and you're like, it's kind of the rock and roll Chipotle, if you will.
Yeah, yeah.
They hate me saying that. But they don't cater to only those people. You go down to one of their big stores that was downtown, and the day it's all business people. If you go to South Broadway on the weekends early, it's families.
Yeah.
But then it still also does that. And one of the best lessons is they show who they are and they go, hey, you might be interested in coming here. You don't have to be that yourself.
Yeah.
And that's one of the biggest things for us when we start Ratio. You know, even though, you know, punk rock is kind of our basis and some indie rock, things like that, that doesn't mean people that come in have to be that. Same way. you know, on weekends, we'll have an older crowd early, and especially now with kids. Oh, and sure. Then it gets younger and maybe more rock and roll as it gets later in the evening. But that's great. We want to be welcoming. We're not going to change who we are, but we're also not going to try to lowest common denominator and not have any angle. Yeah. So it's a really fine balance of being like showcasing who you are, but not saying we only want those kind of people here.
Yeah, without being exclusionary.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So,
and frankly, we think a lot of the music and things that we do, even if people aren't fully into it, may enjoy it. And by the way, I think true, if they only cater to, you know, kind of this death metal or doom and dark metal, they also wouldn't have people come in. But
agreed.
There's people that go, I just kind of like the idea. And maybe that's not their lifestyle, but they like it enough of let's go get that beer at that tap room. I like the artwork, whatever it
right,
is.
Yeah, or you can be a tourist in a subculture for a little while, which is kind of fun. Like, and, I mean, True, to its credit, also has some of the best hot chicken I've ever had.
Yeah, exactly.
So, like, you go in there and you're like, I don't care that it's metal. It's like, to mention another one of your competitors that I like is Station 26. I've had Justin on this show. You know, he's very into, like, Fish and jam bands and stuff, which could not be further from my musical aesthetic. Yet I go there, and I don't feel like they're beating me over the head with it. But, you know, they'll have a bluegrass brunch, or they'll, you know, do, I think they call it Fish Dicks.
Yeah.
Like when Fish plays Dick's Sporting Goods Park. That's not for me, but it doesn't prevent me from going in there, because that's in my part of town, and they make good beer.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, you'll see, we'll try to not say it. We don't even have a lot of things like Hop Leaves or, you know, some of our beer names reference lyrics or maybe song title sideways, but it's not like we have treble clef pale ale. That's where, for me, it's always from the marketing side. That's too on the head, and people feel that then it's corny.
Yeah.
Or it might work for a niche of people, but an average person goes, that's too much.
Yeah, I hate it when beers – I mean, this was a real problem like a decade ago. When beer names were so cutesy poo.
Yes, yeah. It was all either puns or
or like weird, like semi-offensive jokes.
Oh, yeah, right.
Like you go out to San Diego and there's like Belching Beaver. And you go, okay, like that's fine. But I'm not in high school anymore.
Right. Yeah, Kraft had an issue with that. And you know what? Just like any other industry, you grow up, you go through phases. And then hopefully, correctly, you look back and go, wait, why were you doing that? And maybe not everything's a terrible offense, that, but it's enough of where you go, we shouldn't do that anymore. And I think that, especially that with the poor naming choices.
Yeah.
I get it. Kraft, during its second wave, was a bunch of like, it was like a retired person that had enough money and they started in their garage. And some did really well. I'm saying they could create beer, but it wasn't a mature industry that thought about itself and how its impact was out there. And I think we're doing it now. I think
the
good news is
now
that conversation's almost totally gone away. I haven't heard about terrible beer names in a minute.
No, I haven't either, now that you mention it. And so, I mean, yeah.
Every once in a while, someone will do it.
It'll come up and you'll go, really? Like, okay, well, whatever. But that brings up an interesting point, because as we sit here in 2024, you know, there's arguments to be made that craft beer's moment of prominence is largely over.
Oh, yeah. The big discussion right now, right?
I'm sure. Yeah. I mean, you'll read about breweries closing.
Yep.
You know, there's contraction. There's shrinking in the industry, not growth. And so, you know, as you approach the future for Ratio, how do you keep yourselves vital? How do you keep yourselves, you know, flush and get people coming in the door and remaining excited about craft beer?
Yeah, it's a double challenge, because especially everyone who wasn't big and just could weather it. I mean, I said we weren't going to talk about it, but COVID really knocked us back. In fact, we feel like we're back in our startup era again.
Jeez.
Couldn't be at a worse time that craft then also is going through, which I don't think is COVID. I think those are separate deals. It's actually
no, but they happen to
fine,
dovetail.
Yeah, like, where we're just catching our breath from COVID, and now they're like, hey, craft's not growing at the same pace anymore. Well, you know what, though? That's life. The restaurant industry, that was 30 years ago for the restaurant industry. In a good way, it means it's a maturing industry in a positive way. It means it's established, it's mature. We were just on a rampant growth for a while. When we opened, the good news in Denver, it was already competitive, so we didn't enter. Maybe we already got to see good and bad things that other people did. And for a while, you could open a brewery and it didn't matter if your beer was terrible or not. It was like, if there's beer, people will come.
I went to a few of those, too.
And for a while, it worked. And even good breweries, it was just easy. There was a period, and even they'll admit, there's a period where it's like, we didn't even have to send sales reps to out of state. It would just sell, and especially the Colorado name. And that world's gone, but probably correctly so. Whenever you go, why would it be so easy?
Yeah.
You go, well, that's not going to last forever. So
I hope we're getting there with sports gambling, by the way.
Oh, wow. That's in its infancy, right? Yeah. Holy
but
cow.
But like, I'm excited for that to be a little bit more mature, so I'm not being, you know, fire hosed to death with it constantly.
Yeah, I love Jamie Foxx, but if that BetMGM commercial comes on YouTube one more time, I was like, I get it. All right, I'll place a bet if we can just stop this ad.
Me, never. I've never placed a bet. I'm never going to.
Yeah, yeah, good.
But, anyway, so.
What if they stop all the ads if you place that?
I bet what a Faustian
$10
bargain.
You would. yeah.
So you're hit with the double whammy of a contracting craft beer industry, but you know, you said it's a sign of maturity,
yeah.
Right? As you look forward. So as you sit as leader of Ratio, how do you work to keep yourselves vital? And
yeah, so you know, of course, with the flow of an industry, you have to go with it. But first and foremost, keeping the positivity that at least until told otherwise, the sky's not falling. It's a shift. Do I think even if it slows or this dips in certain areas, that's the long-term thing? No, it might level out and that might be it. But that's just the new challenge then. Before, maybe it was an ever-growing pie. And so you go, oh, where do we fit in and where can we be part of it? Now, you know what? We're back with all these other industries like restaurants of, hey, the pie might be kind of the same size. Now you got to fight for your size of your slice.
Yeah.
And that's okay. That's most businesses.
That's life
that's
in the NFL.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think we're at that now. We're just starting to expand into the rest of the state. Separately from any of this was we've finally grown where we want to start expanding outside of Denver, which was always our plan. So we signed with a distributor about 6 weeks ago now. That we had taken about a year looking at.
I just read that. That's CSA,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, CSA.
Yeah.
So we're really excited because now for our growth plan is over the next several years is we're going to grow to the rest of the state eventually. Now the big challenge is how do we do it where we don't lose momentum, but also take our time and make sure when we're getting outside of Denver, how do we still portray what Ratio is?
Yeah.
Because there's still amazing breweries in Colorado, and you're looking for any recognition. And sometimes we get in our own bubble and go, oh yeah, we're in Denver and people know who Ratio is. But man, just get out and go to normal events. Your work's always cut out.
Oh, yeah.
And especially if we walk outside of this city, you got to earn why people care at all. And that's not a bad thing. That's what we should always be driving to do. I mean, it's the same when we were touring. When you go and for the first time go play Wichita, Kansas, and they've never heard you, you better put your good show on. You better have good merch. You know, all these things they don't know, and it's not their fault that they don't know. Back to you're talking about books. I read Get in the Van, Henry Rollins.
Yeah.
And
I haven't read that yet.
Super inspiring. It's more of a journal style book, but it's as he joined Black Flag, as he was not an original member, and how the awakening came when he played a shitty show. I don't know if it was in Oklahoma. I love this story of the book. I got to find it again. And he was so mad, you know, like 20 people showed up to a show and he was all grumpy, played the show. And one of the other band members who had been in it forever pulled him aside afterwards. And he said it was like his most inspiring moment where he goes, hey, man, those 20 kids that did show up aren't why you're mad and you're taking it out on them.
Yeah.
And he goes, and next time that's who came out to support you now. Are you going to get, you know, they came out to support you. If anything, they deserve more.
Yeah.
And there was a turning point from that moment of almost Henry Rollins, his wild and craziness. He took it and he goes, all right, I'll commit to, even if I play a shitty show, as long as it's, or a small show, I should say.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to give those 20 kids in Wichita the best fucking show of their life.
Right.
And I love that attitude. That's the, like, you got to earn it everywhere you go. And the people that do come out when you're small are going to be your evangelists give it to them.
They're going to be your brand ambassadors.
So I tied that into hopefully with the brewery as well, that as we've got to go push in every little town in Colorado that if we want to go. If we go to Fort Collins, a tough town because of awesome breweries like New Belgium and Odell, why would people care about Ratio? That's for us to tell them why. Go support the things we're doing in Denver. Do it there.
That makes perfect sense to me. And it reminds me of, There's a professional wrestler named Devon Dudley who he said, you know, I don't care if we're main eventing WrestleMania or if we're in some high school gym. I want everyone to walk away going, man, the Dudley boys put on a show.
Yeah, so, love it.
Like, and so that, to me, also, I just conducted a training, like a public speaking training. And so when you're up there, you're trying to inspire these people to be better presenters. There's three people in this room, right?
Right.
I was wearing a fucking Cobra Kai costume underneath, like, so I could, like, so, and I had a button-up shirt, so I just ripped it off, so, like, I could do, like, the, just a little bit of stagecraft. Those guys are going to tell that story more than I do.
Yeah.
Right?
100%.
And so you can't, I mean, in PR, that's my day job, it takes a very long time to build a reputation. It takes a very short time to destroy one.
Yeah. So, yep, and you have to work at it to maintain it. That's yeah. another, and that's
it's
a
always
challenge for me, too, and with everyone that works here, is sometimes people go, oh, well, we already did that, or we've already said this, and you're like, yeah, you're going to say it for in perpetuity. And that's what you need to, because it's new people, it's everyone has different interests, mm-hmm. so you always have to be out there hustling.
Always. I mean, I think about, I mean, if you want to put that to your employees, be like, what's a restaurant you went to that you really liked? You know, and they'll tell you, you know, they had a nice dinner, they had an anniversary or birthday or whatever. And you go, have you been back there since? And a lot of special occasion stuff, like, yeah, you have to prove yourself to new people because they'll cycle through. Like, you'll get regulars and stuff.
Yeah.
But there's always new people who don't know who you are. So it's such a weird concept that you're constantly reintroducing yourself.
Yes. And to make sure you're out of your bubble. I always use another example is... we'll get bored of like, oh, can we do not put Ratio Beerworks on this thing? Can we just use like our symbol, our caliper? And I was like, shoot, I think down a block people won't even know what that caliper means. But I read this marketing article on Starbucks, and they started like 78, somewhere in the late 70s. And it was only like 5 years ago or something, for the first time in their history, they dropped Starbucks from that logo of the mermaid.
They dropped
The words.
Yeah.
And it took them 50 years, and they're a multinational conglomerate, and even they were like,
ooh,
let's give it a few more years, like, not everyone knows what this is. And so I was like, dude, call me in 40 years before we drop that, our logo is so strong that everybody knows it.
Wow.
So yeah, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, one of the things that excited me most was when you guys took over the old Declaration Brewing space.
Yep.
And what did that do for you in terms of versatility? And what kind of challenges did that bring that versus having just one location?
Yeah, so that was interesting timing, maybe a silver lining for us for COVID. We were talking about going into cans. We were draft only, which, you know, if we had known a global pandemic was coming, it was a terrible decision because we weren't diversified. So everyone goes, oh, yeah, we just sold more cans. We weren't canning, so... COVID was especially stressful at the beginning for us.
Was it like crowlers and stuff?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. We bought, it was all crowlers to go and all that, and we got it going. But we bought a canning line a week into it. I called. We had just been at an event, luckily. Wild Goose, which is here in Colorado, a canning company.
I know Wild Goose.
Yeah. Was just launching this little one-head automatic filler, though. So
nice.
A step above. And we had gone to this convention. It was like in February. And we're like, that would be cool for specialty beers. And I'd taken even a pamphlet. And literally then, you know, 3 weeks later when everything shut down, I was like, where's that pamphlet? Calling them, hey, do you have any of those? I'll buy it. And they're like, we're already sold out for 6 months. They weren't quite yet. They're like, wow, we just started production. We have a few done. I was like, I'll buy one. And then they go, oops, somebody already sold it. So we ended up getting one from one of the brewing schools I went to, Siebel out of Chicago. Mm-hmm. They go, hey, we built one for this brewing school, and they're closed. And I was like, we'll take it. Anyways, so we did that. That saved us. But it was one head canning line. So we go, boy, we're going to be in cans way faster than we thought. We thought we had a year. And instead it was like our designer at the time. We're like, hey, I know we said you had a year to get that label ready. Can you do one in 2 weeks and then a label a week for 6 weeks?
Jeez.
And we did it. And in some good way, it was like, oh, we entered the market at the worst time, but we actually were getting some sales even in the middle of COVID. So then we're like, well, we can't lose momentum. We were dragged in by this, but now let's go with that flow. So we started looking again. We had been looking for about a year for production space. And that space that was Declaration, you said before, and they had gone out of business before COVID.
Right.
But a father-son had bought the building, and then through, I think, bankruptcy, it started buying equipment out. But COVID slowed all that down. But all of a sudden, the good news, we had been looking for a year. We had realtors start calling us because at the time with a lot of grow houses and things, similar size spaces were getting gobbled up before. Yeah. So all of a sudden that all died. And then people were calling us, hey, are you interested? And we're like, no, we're trying to just not go out of business. But then all of a sudden when we're like, okay, we're not going to go out of business and we want to stay in cans, that space came up. And all of a sudden we were like, wow, instead of taking 2 years to build out or 3 years production facility, we could keep this momentum going and stay in cans and start expanding. That deal came up, partnered with the lease so that we were able to do it even when we weren't making much money. So a really great transfer. But took over it. We had to upgrade a lot of the equipment, bought a new canning line there. But the space was already set for it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so over that's we've been open 2.5 years down there now to the public. We're now doing all our canning out of there. So we have an actual a real canning line.
That's helpful.
Yeah, or a real sized canning line. And we were able to sell our canning, the small one here, to Lady Justice here in town. So we're glad it went here locally. Someone that could utilize it to the correct way.
Well, and what a cool organization Lady Justice is, too.
Yeah, yeah. They're awesome. I was stoked when that happened because we were talking about, well, we should probably get rid of this now. We had built on all these other bells and whistles. It, like selling any equipment like that, man, it's great if you can do it locally and people you know and people that you support out in the industry already. So felt good about that.
One of the things I noticed about every time I come here, so I have my favorites. I just polished off a repeater. You've got your Pilsner.
Yep.
And I love Antidote. I love King of Carry Flowers. The beers here strike me as just being supremely well-built, but not super gimmicky. You know what I mean? Like, there was a whole phase of craft beer that was just really, really gimmicky. And you'll go to places that do that and do that really well. Like, Great Notion out of Portland has some of the weirder beers out there. You know, like the Blueberry Muffin Sour, which somehow really tastes like a blueberry muffin, which is great. But you can't drink a ton of that. Like, I could pound Ratio's beers all day. So tell me a little bit about your design choices of how you introduce new beers or the beers that you guys want to be known for.
Yeah, that's a great question. And in fact, that was actually a really thoughtful choice as we opened. And one of the reasons was back to the inspirations of why we opened the brewery was this idea of loving beer through live music. And so I had gotten into craft and I was out in California drinking a lot of the IPAs, especially at the time West Coast IPA was really taking off with Stone and all these great breweries. And like you said, Portland. But boy, traveling the world, some great beers. But what we notice is really great brands that last do have these beers that you go back to and drink a lot of. And we like the idea back to live music, you know, when we have great patio weather and can do it. What are beers that you're like, hey, I'm here doing these other events and I want a delicious beer, but I might want to have several. So you mentioned wild beers, even before kind of cycling through really strange beers, Colorado for a little while as we were opening was into really big, bold alcoholic beers.
Yeah.
That was
like
the trend.
Higher the ABV.
These great breweries, Avery, Great Divide. I think the deal in Colorado was, oh, a pale ale? We're going to make a 6.5% pale ale, right? Dale's Pale Ale, they've always said. It's an IPA by any measure.
Right.
It's like a 50 BU, 6.5. I mean, that's an IPA. But it's like, oh, no, that's a Colorado pale. And everything was strong.
Yeah.
Great Divide, I don't think, had a beer under 7% for years.
Yeah.
So, in fact, Dear Yous, our Saison, we wanted to do a year-round Saison. A unique enough style. But I look back and go, hey, Saisons originally were these lighter, drinkable, sessionable beers. And only at some point.
Farmhouse beer, right?
Right.
It's like a shift beer.
Yeah,
if
finish
you're agricultural.
Working, doing these field work.
Yeah.
And it was like, I loved, I mean, there's Tank 7 from Boulevard.
Oh, God,
but then Colette out of Great Divide. Inspirational beer. But I think at the time, I'm guessing it was a 7.5%. So it's like you'd have one or, you know. Maybe get to your second one, and if it's hot out, you're like, it might be nap time. So I was, you know, brought ours down. I think ours is 5.5%. Back to, man, a Saison like that, bright, citrus, crisp, you want that like a 5% beer that you can have two or three out when, you know, out on the patio. So that was our thought. Brew great beer and have some classic styles with maybe enough of a modern twist. Like our Saison uses Citra, an American hop. So that was that's not standard in a Saison.
Well, and it doesn't have the heavy like coriander overtones.
Right. Yeah, we were not doing some of the European or doing wit style with that, like coriander or orange peels. Yeah. This is really classic, clean. That base beer is like a 50% wheat, white wheat, simple, classic Saison recipe, but then just the American hop twist to it.
It's more of a French Saison too, right?
Yeah, we use a French Saison yeast, so that's pretty unique. They're all Belgian in origin. That's that French Saison. There's like a craft brewery over there in Calais, France, that took some Belgian strain, but it went drier than some of these. So a lot of times people don't like Saisons because they're sweet or bubblegummy, and some people love them for that reason. But this French strain goes really dry, sometimes earthier, but definitely a little bit of citrus. So then adding a Citra hop on it was just, to us, a perfect complement to the style.
Well, it's a nice way of putting your own stamp on, on a style.
So a lot of times we do that. And then other times we just lean into, God, what are great classic beers that we like to drink too. Our Cityscapes, our Mexican lager, that was a seasonal spring that we started doing. And love it. In Colorado, it's just always been a really great drinkable classic style here. And we are going to do that as seasonal. And sometimes you go with organically and maybe back to live music and things like that where we're at a lot. It just started selling. And we're like, I love that kind of organic. We have a thought process why we release. And then if it does well, we just keep expanding the season until it's year-round. And now it's our number one selling beer. But then we do every once in a while have weird ones, like our King of Care Flowers, which is a Saison base as well. That one's just like turned into a fan favorite because I think it's a good wine crossover where when people like, hey, maybe beer flavored beer or I like wine or these things, instead of trying to get them the lightest, like light lager ever, they already know what beer tastes like. Give them something that's like show the wide spectrum of what beer is. And really unique. And so we do have some success with there, but you're right. We're not trying to crank it out. We know back to, you got to figure your lane and you can't be everything to everyone. There's great breweries that can cycle through 300 different styles a year and maybe do it really well. But boy, that's hard to sustain unless you're really good at it. And we knew that's not who we were. Now we like to do our specialties. The good news about having a second brewery is we have a little more experimental space than we ever had before. So now we'll do it for our tap rooms, but you won't see it out in the market as much.
No, that makes good sense to me. And for you to be able to... So that's my problem with weed, by the way.
With which one?
Weed.
Oh, yeah, weed.
Just weed in general, because you'll be like, oh, man, I really had that strain, and you'll go back to...
You're dating yourself. It's cannabis now. Just kidding. But yeah. I love that. I was like, what? What's weed? That's what I called it my whole life, too.
It's so funny, like, because, like, my favorite dispensary is right down the street here, too.
There we go.
But you'll go, and you'll be like, I really enjoyed that strain. Do you guys have that? And they're like, no.
Yeah.
Why is it always different, man? Why do I have to keep chasing this? Why do you guys keep crossbreeding this shit? Like, you're wearing me out with it because, like, I know what I like, and so, like, I kind of want to have that again, and that's not always the case.
And that's the interesting balance to find. I agree. There's good reasons to have flagship beers. People get familiarity with it, and you love it, and that structure of, I mean, look at, like, a PBR as just taking a, you know, that was a grandpa beer or whatever they called it. But marketed it directly to either music and action sports. But people got used to it. I'm not even saying it's great beer or not. But that idea of, oh, I like it, and that means this to me when
it's
I have
cool
it.
It's a cool-looking can and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, and it's always available, right? Yeah. So you should have those elements. But then maybe you can mix it up where that it is fun to try new things and stay fresh and relevant. And you don't want to die on your brand and have a beer that went out of style 20 years ago either.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, you could convince yourself into that being a good idea too. You know, like, you know, you're making an ice bock or something, like something super obscure. But one of my favorite one-off beers for you, here's a deep cut for you. I think it was a white IPA. It was the Adam Caton Holland one.
Yes. There's some lemon in there. Yeah. Yeah, it was an IPA. Yeah. I just saw a picture of that the other day. Artist and another fellow comedian who just released the special, Jeff Tice, did the label art for it. And it's awesome. The label art. That was in a bottle. Glass bottle, if anyone remembers that.
Brings you back to your homebrewing days.
Yeah, it was like 22-ounce bombers.
Yeah. I remember when I had friends who would like, they're like, hey, you know, I brewed some beer. And you go to their house and you go, it's good, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I was, oh, boy.
No, that was super fun. And actually, you mentioned Adam Caton Holland in the comedy scene in Denver.
He's been on this show.
Oh, yeah, it's great. He's phenomenal. And I didn't realize that our very first comedy show we did here, I was looking back at Instagram. We have a new creative manager.
Nice.
So we're looking back through, and our at least on Instagram, our first comedy show we hosted here, Adam did it. and pretty awesome just because he's such a godfather of Denver, and he should have his – he went to East High School, and he should be on the Hall of Fame.
I adore him. and he's a phenomenal guy, too. Yeah. So I had him on my show. I booked him on Vic Lombardi's show, another Denver guy.
Yep.
He's terrific. I've met and I know all three of those Grolix guys. And it's so cool. Like, this is one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you, is because at this point, when I bring someone from out of town, I almost always bring them here. Because, like, okay, so here we are. We're right across the street from Finn's Manor. There's lots of cool stuff around here. This tap room is great, and especially that area in the back. I mean, I've seen pro wrestling back there. Which is...
That's talking about when I said, hey, try a shot at something. That when that was pitched, we were like, that's the weirdest idea. That'll never work. But we're like, well, let's try it.
But, I mean, Lucha Libre and Laughs, they do a great job.
They're phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it couldn't be... What a weird, strange mix in doing it at a brewery, and then it works great.
Yeah. So as you picture yourself or project yourself into the future... For you, for Ratio, where do you hope it goes? How do you hope it evolves? Are you looking to maintain? Are you looking to grow? How do you see it?
Well, like you said, one of the biggest ones now when you're saying in the market is still maintain of like what our tap rooms are and make sure you stick to that. A lot of you see it out in the industry with people closing of making sure you don't shift out of fear or like, oh, you need to shift. It's like, go back to the core of who you are and why you're doing it. I think those will always hold true, even with shifting markets. But we are, interestingly, in our timeline, we are starting to expand. And so it's exciting and scary time for us of like, oh, we actually really get to go into Boulder now, which we had dabbled in before. And hey, we're going to go up to Summit County or and then eventually Colorado Springs at Fort Collins. So super exciting. But the real challenge for us, but also excitement, is can we bring of who we are and go do those things in those cities? Because the last thing anyone ever wants when you're in a town and someone out of town comes in, the cool thing is we're at least Colorado.
Yeah.
But you never want to feel inauthentic. We always say, like, we try to not do any big grand overtures. People hopefully know us because year round we're doing that. We're like walking the walk. So if we're supporting out at galleries or music events, you know us because we're doing it all year long, not one week where we just support it that week.
Right.
And it's like, oh, it's music week. And now here's this brand X that's all into it. That comes across inauthentic. So that we can we get up there, get people there? We know those towns already, but we want to be part of those communities too. So that's exciting, and that'll be the real fun challenge the next couple of years is us going into these other towns.
That's fantastic. I mean, I think about when in the era of rapid craft beer expansion, I'll pick on them because they're not here anymore, but like when 10 Barrel came into town, you know, people were very skeptical about that because it's like, okay, you guys are, I think it was a Portland brewery.
Yep.
Eventually.
Originally.
Yeah. Picked up by AB InBev.
Yep.
They open an outpost here and you go in there and you go, this doesn't feel like a thing, you know, like it just, every time I went in there, it felt ill-fitting and it's no longer there. So I guess I'm not alone in feeling that way.
It's true. And we've seen, by the way, Colorado's a hard market to break into. What's funny I think people from out of state go, what a wonderful craft beer market it is. We're one of the best. So I don't think we're number one at anything, but we're like in the top three or four on everything. That's what's wild. So in a weird way, I still think Colorado's number one. So it's like, you know, per capita, breweries, how many people drink craft, all this. But it also makes it where it's not a slam dunk. We actually have a pretty knowledgeable base here, and people have lots of options. And once again, back to why you care. We've seen, so not only that, we've seen so many big brands come in, kill it for 3 months and then die. And these are even great breweries, but what they didn't do is support it. They're like, well, why are you in Colorado besides that it's just your brand? You can support it with some money for that 3 months, but if you're not putting in and why you support it all year, the brand eventually dies away. I mean, I think it's like 95% failure rate. The only few I know that have seemed to have come in and done well is Bell's out of Kalamazoo, Two-Hearted Ale in particular. That might be it. That like consistently sells well in this town.
Two-Hearted and Oberon. Like Oberon's a good beer.
Yeah, that's from them too. And great brewery. But in other great Deschutes centered, what a great brewery out of Oregon. Yeah. I haven't seen them around for a while because same way I don't think they put people on the ground.
True.
So it's a good lesson for us in a way, even though we're within our own state, to make sure you support it. I said PBR before. I don't think that's a fluke. I think why they're popular is they support the things they do. They right. go, hey, we're gonna go after music, and they support it, and they're there all the time, all year, not just for the first month they launched.
Right. You either got to get you got to put your spade in the ground and turn the dirt over, or leave.
Yeah, it's too hard of a market to not to not do it
to not dedicate to it like that. Well, Jason, I'll tell you what, I could sit here and drink beer with you all afternoon and talk about punk rock and beer, but we do need to wrap up. Here's the part in the show where we do plugs. Where can people get in touch with Ratio? Anything you want to plug, the floor is yours.
Sweet. Thanks. Yeah, this was great. The nice thing, all our social media is all Ratio Beer Works, whatever platform you're on. Our website's up and running. We're distributed, if you're a restaurant or bar, all those things, distributed through CSA, and we're now slowly expanding through the state. So we're excited about that. Hopefully we'll see you at your local art gallery, your local venue, your local favorite restaurant. So we're getting there.
That's good, man. And I'll see you at Punk Rock Saves Lives.
That's right.
I'll definitely be here for that.
It's 3 day. Drink your Gatorade.
Drink your Gatorade.
It's hot, too. It's summertime, right?
Oh, it's always hot.
We got the misters rolling, though.
Jason Zimbrunnen, co-founder of Ratio Beer Works. Thank you for sharing all of this with me, and I wish you nothing but continued success.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And that'll do it for episode 369 of the John of All Trades podcast with Jason Zimbrunnen, co-founder of Ratio Beer Works. What a great dude. What a great chat. They make great beers and have phenomenal events. So I cannot be more thrilled that he took some time with me to just sit down and share the story. I hope you enjoyed it too. So check out Ratio. All of that info is down in the show notes, no matter what podcatcher you're listening on, whether that's iTunes, Spotify, Pandora, Audible, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your pods, it's down there. Also on the website, johnofalltrades.us. There's a companion blog piece that goes to this, and all of my episodes are housed there. I have more than 400 total episodes. Check them out. The John of All Trades podcast is a production of Deft Communications. Check out Deft on the web, DEFTCOM.us. I do all manner of public outreach. I'm also a professional podcast producer. I have more than a half dozen shows that I am currently producing, and I would love to do one for you. So if you have an idea, hit me up. JON@DEFTCOM.us. That's my email address. JOATpod is the social handle. That's Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, Pinterest, and Instagram. Also, Blue Sky and Threads. I have not decided where I'm going to flee Twitter to, but I don't know. It's probably going to happen here at some point because Twitter continues to get worse. I'm out of here for now. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for letting me be a part of your life. I hope you're having a great summer. I hope you're finding fulfillment. I hope whatever it is you're doing brings you intense joy. So, until I hear you again, I'm out of here for now. Say goodnight, Gracie.
That's good, Johnny.